Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In Ohio, the statute of limitations for rape is 20 years, and tort laws cap how much victims can recover from their rapists. In January, a Cuyahoga County Common Pleas judge sided with the defendant in reducing a settlement from $20 million to $250,000 for a plaintiff who had been repeatedly raped as an 11-year-old girl. Now, the legal community and state lawmakers are rethinking the consequence of settlement caps and the consequence of the statute of limitations when it comes to rape. Joining us is John K. Fitch. He's a civil attorney from Columbus who represents sexual assault plaintiffs. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also Jessica Simpkins, a sexual assault survivor who is lobbying against settlement caps in rape cases. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Jessica, the case referred to in the introduction isn't yours. Yours is Simpkins versus Grace Brethren. It went before the Ohio Supreme Court. There are similarities. Can you kind of suss out the similarities, you know, why we're talking about both of them?
Yes. So back on March 6, 2008, I was raped by my pastor at my church. We went to court and were granted a settlement by a jury, which we then got reduced by the judge for the tort caps. We proceeded to go up to the Court of Appeals and then on to the Ohio Supreme Court. And there we had judges telling me that because I can live a normal life, it must have not affected me that much. So they kept with the tort caps and reduced my settlement.
So someone could lose a limb, maybe, in the process, but and that they would the settlement caps wouldn't be come into effect. But
correct.
When it's something like rape, it doesn't matter.
Correct. There is an exception in the statute for loss of use of a limb, for loss of a bodily organ system. Now, interestingly, if you lose one eye, you're not considered to lose a bodily organ system. So these caps apply across the board to all kinds of victims of crime and others. So, for example, you could be 16 years old and someone go left to center, you're hit, you lose an eye or you're brain damaged and you're capped at $250,000. So obviously those caps apply to victims of rape, even children. And as you mentioned, the case in Cleveland, that was Amanda Brandt, a client of mine. She was raped over a period of months, raped and otherwise sexually abused 20 times. The jury determined her damages to be $20 million. That was reduced under state law to $250,000. She suffered from severe PTSD. She became homeless. She became a drug addict. She tried to kill herself. But nonetheless, these laws apply, and they apply even to the perpetrator, in this case, Roy Pompa, one of the most notorious sexual predators who had done this to a number of girls very young at age.
Tort laws are about mistakes that have been made and what you can recover from in those kind of things. When it comes to rape, rape's not a mistake. It's purposeful.
Well, actually, the tort laws in Ohio, which are some of the most extreme in the country, and by the way, only about 9 states have laws that cover things other than medical negligence. Medical negligence, most states have that. Relatively few states have tort laws that will cap pain and suffering for other types of incidents. But Ohio has one of the most extreme. So even if you intend to hurt someone, as we saw in the Amanda Brandt case, you're covered by those tort laws or the caps on damages. So in Ohio, the law protects the rapist and not the child. It protects the criminal and not the victim. That's what we have in Ohio.
As much as you feel comfortable sharing, Jessica Simpkins, tell us what happened, what your story is behind this.
Yeah, so when I was raped by my pastor, it completely changed who I am. I was 15 years old at the time, and I still sit back and wonder, like, had this not happened, who would I be today? Would I be a different person? Would I not be afraid to go outside in the dark by myself? Would I be more open to people, to new people, to relationships? And it just blows my mind that we have people who can sit here and say that somebody who was raped, it's not affecting them enough to reduce those court or those tort caps, that, you know, they can still live a normal life, because it's not possible. I've tried to do everything I can to forget it, to, you know, just move forward. And I can move forward, but it's always there in the back of my mind, always comes up. And I'll have to live the rest of my life with it.
Where would forward be if that hadn't happened? What would you be moving toward today differently than if it hadn't happened?
I mean, I probably would have finished school from not wanting to come back home just to be closer to my family, my dad in particular. Who knows, could be married by now if I could trust people enough. And unfortunately, I don't see that happening.
The civil suit that was filed originally wasn't against the pastor,
well,
the perpetrator?
Actually, it was in the original suit. Ultimately, we decided to proceed just against the church, and that's the case that the jury heard. In Jessica's case, there were two prior victims. Now, they weren't raped, but the abuse was pretty bad. We were able to uncover that during the course of discovery, and that was a large part of the reason why the jury sided with us, I believe, and in favor of Jessica, because the church knew that this man had a history of sexually predatory conduct against young women or girls.
In 2017, well, I you know, there's the toll of the rape itself, which you just described, but I'm wondering about all the years since then. You're 27
right
now.
Mm-hmm.
12 years have passed. What has that toll been?
I mean, going through court, it was rough. But now at this point in my life, I want to make a difference for girls that are going to be after me. Girls that this happened to, because unfortunately it's not going to stop. It's still going to happen. So that they don't get their caps don't get reduced. Money's never going to make it better. But just the fact that you have a law supporting rapists, people who hurt children instead of the child, when the child's the one that needs to be protected.
And if I may add to that, it's not for me just about these individual cases, as important as they are. But the reality is that civil lawyers have played an important role in uncovering the sexual abuse of children. And when you make these laws, these limits so low, you're creating a major and powerful deterrent to litigation against the abuser, and especially at the institutional level. Imagine, for example, if you try to go up against Harvey Weinstein or Jeffrey Epstein, who was really involved with the children. The man's a billionaire. And you have caps of $250,000. It's just impractical to get accountability. You can spend $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 just on expenses in litigation. So it's a very powerful deterrent to uncovering this sort of thing. And in my view, if we can't do our job, then at some level, additional children are going to be abused.
What are your expectations this round in the General
my
Assembly?
My expectations are not high. You know, Jessica and I went through this back in 2013. There's publicity. A lot of people are saying this is terrible, and it goes nowhere before our legislature. So I'm not terribly optimistic that anything is going to change, but we'll see.
Not even in the Me Too era?
Well, again, we'll see. But this is all driven by very big money and very political, politically powerful forces that are behind this, the major insurance companies, major self-insured corporations, you know, they benefit from all of this. So it's difficult for children who don't have a large political action committee to compete with these major corporations who drive all of this and obviously benefit from it. For example, in Jessica's case, At the trial court level, her award was reduced to $250,000. Now, there's an insurance policy in place that was greater than that, but she's not able to access that. So who's the direct beneficiary of this? The insurance company.
Hmm. What about you, Jessica Simpkins? What do you think about the Me Too movement and how that might affect your chances?
I mean, I definitely hope it does make a difference. People coming forward, more awareness of it. But like John said, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to do anything because we've been through this before and it doesn't leave much hope.
You've testified, right, in the Ohio General Assembly?
No.
No.
She didn't. She did not. She was not asked to testify.
What kind of questions do they ask? I mean, what is your sense about why are you pessimistic about the chances going forward? It's just because of the powerful interests at play here?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, they're extremely powerful and influential. This tends to be very political. The original tort reform, my recollection is it was totally partisan. Republicans yeah. supported it. Democrats opposed it. Obviously, we know the Republicans dominate the state.
But it would seem to be more about medical. You know, when I was covering that in the Ohio General Assembly, it didn't. I don't remember this issue coming up as being covered by it.
Well, again, this issue, we need to be clear. These set of restrictions or caps have nothing to do with medical malpractice.
Right.
We have completely separate legislation for doctors, nurses, and hospitals. Okay, but Ohio went the extra step to cap everybody. Not everybody. We have a few exceptions.
Because you mentioned the physical disabling.
Yes. Well, yeah. it's pretty extreme, as I
yeah.
pointed out.
Yeah.
But as I said, most states don't have this kind of extreme reform, but we do in Ohio.
Well, Jessica Simpkins, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your time. Jessica Simpkins is a sexual assault survivor. She's lobbying for a change in tort reform that changes the caps or eliminates the caps on settlements against plaintiffs in rape cases. We are going to continue our conversation. State Representative Bill Seitz, who wrote the current tort reform legislation or helped write it, is going to join us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In Ohio, the statute of limitations for rape is 20 years, and tort laws cap how much victims can recover from their rapists. In January, for example, a Cuyahoga County Common Pleas judge sided with the defendant in reducing a settlement from $20 million to $250,000 for a plaintiff who had been repeatedly raped as an 11-year-old girl. We just heard from a young woman who was raped by her pastor in 2008 when she was 15 years old. 3 years after tort reform was passed. Her $3.5 million jury award was reduced to $250,000. She appealed that all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court, which sided with the perpetrator. Now the legal community and state lawmakers are rethinking the consequence of settlement caps and the statute of limitations when it comes to rape. Still with us is John Fitch. He's a civil attorney from Columbus who represents sexual assault plaintiffs, including the two I just mentioned. Representative Bill Seitz, a Cincinnati Republican, helped write into law the current settlement cap when it comes to crimes such as rape. Welcome to the show, Representative Seitz.
Thank you. Welcome to. Happy to be with you, Ann.
What was the rationale for limiting damage awards in cases of sexual assault?
Well, let's start with getting some facts on the table. First of all, there is no cap on economic damages. So anything in the nature of lost wages, medical or hospital expenses, et cetera, is fully compensable without limit.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, there is no cap on catastrophic bodily injury. So any injury that results in loss of limb, loss of bodily function, there is no non-economic damage cap on that. Non-economic damage damages are pain and suffering, mental anguish, all of these things that are very hard to quantify. But there is no cap on non-economic damages in catastrophic injury cases. And third, and most importantly, there is no cap on non-economic damages for those people that commit what's called intentional torts. So therefore, the actual perpetrators of these sexual assaults and rape may be held fully responsible for the entire award. But what happened in the case that went to the Supreme Court is the plaintiff did not seek money only from the actual perpetrator. They sought money from the church that employed the perpetrator. And that is what this new legislation would attempt to do. They would attempt to hold the employers of these perpetrators responsible without limit as to non-economic damages. And the employers would only be liable on a theory of negligence, negligent hiring, negligent supervision. And that is simple carelessness. That is not an intentional tort. So we need to keep in mind there is no cap on the actual damages recoverable against the actual rapist. But what these folks want to do, since the actual rapist is oftentimes in jail or dead or incapacitated, and in almost all cases has no money, they want to seek the deep pocket being either Ohio State University, in the case of the Strauss investigations, or the Catholic Church, or other churches.
Well, why shouldn't they be entitled to that deep pocket? Representative
because
Sykes.
The deep pocket did not commit any sexual assault. No. The deep pocket did not commit any rape. The deep pocket is only liable on a theory of negligence. And our overarching theme in the 2004 tort reform bill was there will be non-economic damage caps in negligence cases, whatever the theory of negligence is, whether it's negligent hiring, whether it's negligent supervision, whatever it is, if it is simple, a matter of carelessness. That's what negligence is. It is malpractice.
That's a legal term. Negligence is legally considered carelessness.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. A failure to adhere to the appropriate standard of care. That is to be distinguished from intentional torts. And I would think anyone that rapes someone would do so intentionally.
Right.
Okay?
But might an organization, we've seen repeatedly with the Boy Scouts, with the Catholic Church, with all kinds of organizations where they purposefully neglected the issue.
But that's simple negligence. That is still negligence.
But now, even if they do it on purpose, even if they know there's a problem, but they purposefully neglect it.
That's negligent supervision. That's right. Now, if the Catholic Church ordered the priest to go out and abuse young children, they would be liable without limit.
But if I get what you're saying. But if the church knew the priest was raping kids and didn't do anything about it, they don't have an obligation to protect the children.
That's negligence.
Right?
Negligence, and they are entitled to be held accountable for that.
They're not partaking in it, and so therefore they're not doing it.
They're not right. They did not intend that result. Okay, they may have been careless and failed to follow up appropriately. They may have failed to properly train people. They may have failed to properly give them instructions. They may have failed to appropriately segment off suspected abusers from being in a position where they could commit such offenses. But all of that smacks of negligence. So the reason why we have non-economic damage caps in negligence cases is because, by its very nature, pain and suffering, mental anguish, things of that nature, are very difficult to objectivize or quantify. And therefore, it was appropriate to put a cap in to set settlement guardrails around negotiations to get cases settled prior to trial.
John Fitch?
If I may.
Representative Sykes, hang on one second. John Fitch, civil attorney with Columbus. Go ahead.
Representative Sykes, are you familiar with the Ohio Supreme Court Waite versus DHSC 2018 case?
That was the tell me what that was. Was that the one about the church?
No, that's a defamation case.
Okay.
So
Okay.
So you have repeatedly argued that the caps only apply in negligence cases, and you're incorrect. The statute is explicit in its language it applies to all, including willful, wanton, reckless misconduct, such as drunk driving. This bill protects drunk. May I finish, please? It also applies to intentional acts. Now, if you look at the decision in Waite, which is August of 2018, even before you were arguing about this only applies to negligence, the Supreme Court explicitly says that this is not limited to negligence claims. Okay, so the law is that your tort reform does in fact apply to drunk drivers as well as those who rape children. It's clear.
There was an express exception for drunk driving in the Senate Bill 80, okay?
It does not appear in the statute, Senator or Representative Sides. It does not appear in the statute. Judge Burnside was in the Cleveland case. Amanda Brandt is an extremely well-respected judge, okay? She applied the caps even to a man who rapes children. Okay. Now, our Supreme Court has already said these caps are not limited to negligence. So clearly, they do apply to those who rape children, those who drink and drive.
The legislation that has been introduced would remove the caps as against negligence. Yeah, so that the deep pockets that we talked about before would be limitlessly liable in the absence of intentional conduct. So I was speaking about the newly introduced legislation. The bill that you're talking about passed 16 years ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to go back and look at it, but that surprises me. I'm familiar with the decision of the Ohio Supreme Court in the Church case, where a pastor or someone in the employ of the church raped the child or abused the child, and the court said, well, the employer is not going to be held limitlessly liable. The caps apply as to the church employer. I don't know the name of that case. Presumably you do, right?
Yeah, so we're talking about Waite versus DHSC, Ohio Supreme Court, 155, Ohio State 3rd, 401. I could quote you the language if you wanted, but that's the essence of it.
All right. So, by the way, listeners, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about state law that caps amounts to $250,000 in cases of rape. My guests, you just heard John Fitch. He is a civil attorney from Columbus who represents sexual assault plaintiffs, and also Representative Bill Seitz of Cincinnati, who is author of the legislation that set those caps. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Representative Seitz, we're in the middle of the Me Too movement now. You know, we got Cyrus Vance talking about the Harvey Weinstein case and how things have changed. It's a new day. We understand more about what the damages are when it comes to rape, what the human toll is when it comes to rape. Have you had a change of heart at all? I mean, does that change at all your approach to this and what people deserve when it comes to compensation for that? No, they didn't lose a limb. It's not catastrophic physical necessarily, but it, in some cases, as my last guest described, it can be catastrophic emotional damage that changes an entire course of one's life.
Again, I have no quarrel with the right to recover limitlessly against the actual perpetrator. My issue is there will be caps as applied to the deep pocket, because the actual perpetrator often has very little money.
But
in Mr. Weinstein's case, he's got money. So if he's guilty, as was just determined, of the things that he was guilty of, obviously he should be held to full account without limit as to non-economic or economic damage.
But all the people that enabled him to do what he did, they're not liable. They're just merely negligent.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right. So I would expect that I don't know if Mr. Fitch had a dog in the fight of the case that he mentioned a few minutes ago, but I assume he was trying to get the plaintiff in that case was trying to get money from not only the actual rapist, but whoever employed the actual rapist. I don't know. Is that the case or not?
It's a defamation case, Representative Seitz. And the Supreme Court applied the caps in a defamation case. And defamation, of course, is in the nature of an intentional tort. And the Supreme Court said, yes, these apply, even in the case of an intentional tort like defamation. So the bill does cap damages for those who drink and drive and severely injure someone. As well as those who intend to harm others. In these cases, we're talking about the rape of children.
We're talking past each other because I'm not talking about this defamation case, which I've never read. I'm talking about a Supreme Court case that probably goes back to 2016 or 2017.
Okay, that's the Jessica Simpkins case, mm-hmm. And I did represent Jessica, and just so you know, the evidence in this case showed that there were two prior victims, and that the mother of the one victim, she was like 13, 14 years old at the time, testified she met with a church, and the head of the church said, "Let's keep this quiet to protect our brother." And they did keep it quiet.
So
they buried it, and as a result, Jessica then suffered the consequences that she did. But may I ask you a question, sir? Do you agree that the law should not apply, the cap should not apply to drunk drivers? Do you agree?
I seem to remember we made that exception back when we were working on it, and I would remind you it was Senate Bill 80 that we were talking about, so I was not the author of it. I worked on it because the Senate passed a far more draconian bill than we ended up with, so over the course of the time while it was pending in the House, we changed it, and we actually removed the caps.
But you would agree they should it should not apply to drunk drivers?
I would say it probably doesn't apply, shouldn't apply, right.
Great.
Representative Seitz, what about the magic of $250,000? It sounds arbitrary at this point in time. Any notions of changing that?
Well, you know, there's been some discussions about that, actually, and here's the absolute truth. Yes, you could argue that costs have inflated since 2004, and therefore an increase in the amount is warranted based on inflation. However, there is no cost associated with pain and suffering or mental anguish. That does not go up or down with inflation. It hurts just as much to have a broken arm in 2004 as it does in 2020. The truth is, the plaintiff's lawyers' costs have gone up since 2004, so the cost to them of prosecuting these cases has gone up, and therefore the argument is an increase in the cap is necessary because the lawyer's fees are typically paid out of the non-economic damage amounts.
Okay, so it's a fact that the cost of doing this kind of litigation is gone up.
Well, one would assume because everything right. capable of being economically calculated has gone up.
And you don't think that we've, as a society, have become more educated and we've illuminated more what the pain and suffering is of rape in the last 16 years?
I don't know. I would argue that pain and suffering is pain and suffering. It's certainly become more widely bandied about. More people are coming forward. That's a good thing. By the way, the statute of limitations is 25 years on rape, not 20. We changed that a couple years ago.
Okay, thanks for saying that.
If I may, I would point out on this issue of pain and suffering, one of the problems is when you put everybody in a box, which this legislation does, you have people who suffer back sprains, they're in the same box of $250,000 cap as someone like Amanda Brandt, who was raped 20 times. ended up trying to commit suicide. So in this legislation, we have this box that everybody's put in, and caps are the same for virtually everybody, except for, as the representative has pointed out, this extreme exception for catastrophic physical injuries, such as loss of use of a limb or bodily organ system.
Right, which, depending on the severity of the sexual assault, could be called into play, depending on what it is, right?
Extremely difficult to argue that rape qualifies as an exception to the caps. It just doesn't. So,
well, I mean, it depends on the severity of the sexual assault, does it not?
We argued that in Jessica Simpkins' case, or we tried to argue it, but when you have such an extreme law or legislation that requires, even if you're blind in one eye, you're still subject to the caps. Think about that. So you could be 16 years old. Someone goes left to center. You're blind in one eye, and that doesn't qualify as an exception to the cap. Very, very difficult to conjure up a scenario where someone is raped and that qualifies as an exception to the cap. Obviously, it didn't for Amanda and Brandt, and it didn't for Jessica.
Representative Bill Seitz, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Happy to be on always, with you. All right.
Always appreciate
you.
It. Yep. And also, John Fitch, civil attorney from Columbus, represents sexual assault plaintiffs. Thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
We have more to come, so stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In Ohio, the statute of limitations for rape is 25 years, and tort laws cap how much victims can recover from their rapists. The legal community and state lawmakers are rethinking the consequence of these legislative actions when it comes to rape. New bills have been introduced that would eliminate the statute of limitations and damage caps for rape victims. Joining us is Marcy Hamilton, a professor and CEO of Child USA. That's a nonprofit think tank working to end child abuse and neglect at the University of Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Thank you.
You wrote last year that 2019 was going to be the tipping point when it came to sexual assault and how we dealt with the statute of limitations on that score. Why 2019?
2019 was a banner year because at the end of 2018, we had three events come together at the same time. We had the Epstein scandal. We had the grand jury report on diocese coming out of Pennsylvania. And we had the Nassar scandal. And when you put it all together, our trusted institutions, U.S. Olympics, the church, and our wealthy billionaire class that we're supposed to be engaging like adults are all dangerous to children. And so we saw a very exciting year. And we're hoping to see change in Ohio in the near future.
And yet Representative Seitz, who I just talked to about the caps, remains unmoved on that score, doesn't think that changes the basic fact that people will start going after the deep pockets and the perpetrators won't be, that it's not about them, it's about who has the most money.
So that's just false when it comes to child sex abuse in particular. Child sex abuse victims in the state have until age 30, but the average age for victims of child sex abuse to come forward is 52. And the average cost over a lifetime is about $820,000. So what I don't understand is how any lawmakers at this point couldn't be operating from the facts. And the facts are that we don't know all of the perpetrators in Ohio. because the victims have been silenced by the unfairly short laws. And frankly, it's just not fair to have the victims bear all the cost of the sex assault. To let off the institutions that made it happen.
Representative Sykes just corrected me as well. I was saying that Ohio's statute of limitations was 20 years. He said they changed that a few years ago to 25. What about that?
Well, that was for adults, but it's still a problem.
Okay.
Because, and that's why what we're seeing is the adult victims of the Me Too movement are building on the work of the child sex abuse movement on statute of limitations, because there are a lot of the same issues. You've got trauma, you've got shame, humiliation, you've got the power of the perpetrator over the victim. And so for many of these victims, they don't come forward. And even when they do, they are ignored, or they're told, oh, your case isn't strong enough. It's this so-called he said, she said. But if you bring in the traumatologists and the experts, these cases prove themselves up. So essentially, sadly, what Ohio is doing right now is they're taking the side of the perpetrators and the institutions who let them act. And basically, they're just leaving the victims to suffer.
Let's see. I want to turn to Jody in Alabama. Jody, you are Jessica Simpkins' sister, right?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I really think the law does need to be changed. It's absurd as it stands right now.
What is your experience with Jessica and what she suffered?
Like she was saying, she has changed. She used to be so much more outgoing and everything. Now it's she looks over her shoulder all the time. She's more withdrawn. She does not trust at all. Relationships, they're non-existent right now. And she's very protective over not only my children, but any children.
Sure. Well, Jody, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
And not a problem.
Thanks for your interest.
Thank you.
You bet. You know, Marcy Hamilton, the legislator earlier was describing these as kind of intangible, non-economic damage that you can't put a value on it. It doesn't cost anything. It is just is what it is when it comes to this kind of pain and suffering. How would you value that kind of a thing?
Well, so those values are being done every day across the country. We have numerous dioceses that are doing compensation funds to help the victims. We have the Boy Scouts right now are in the national bankruptcy. They're going to engage in exactly that kind of valuation. It happens all the time. You know, I was there in 2006 when the members of the House let the bishops shut down justice for the child sex abuse victims. And they've really squandered 14 years of not being able to find out who the actual perpetrators are across the state. And they're just getting farther and farther behind, so that now Ohio is definitively one of the worst states in the country for these statutes of limitations.
Let's see. Heather in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Heather.
Hi there. I'm just learning about this. I listen to your show a lot, and I'm 44 years old now. But when I was 19, I was raped, never reported it. And it wasn't until a few years ago, after a separate traumatic event that I was going through counseling for EMDR-type therapy, that this rape that I buried deep, deep, deep down, and I second what your other caller, Jody, was talking about being withdrawn and all of that stuff. You know, when I was 19, I was very naive and knew no one would believe me. The way it happened and everything. So I'm a little bit confused. Has the statute of limitations been changed for 20 to 25 years now?
Apparently, that's what Representative Seitz said.
Okay, yeah, because that would put me right at the 24-year mark right now today. So that's a really good thing, because sometimes, like people say, you know, you bury things. You try not to think about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very unfortunate situation for many people. So I'm glad you're doing the show.
Yeah.
So this is Marcy, and I just want to say, first of all, your experience is so common, and God bless you for coming forward. The problem with the extension of the 5 years, and there's no retroactivity in it, is that if you were already over 20 when they extended it, you don't get the benefit of the extension to age 25.
Oh, okay.
The day your statute of limitations expires, unless there's a retroactive part of the law, and there is not in Ohio,
okay,
is the day the claim expires.
Hmm. Good to know. Thank you so much, Marcy, for clarifying that. Heather, thank you for calling in and sharing your story. I'm really sorry, and thank you for listening. You know, in Ohio, two bills have been introduced that would remedy the statute issue when it comes to specifically the Dr. Richard Strauss case at OSU. Representative Brett Hillier, a Republican from Eurexville, introduced a bill that would specifically relate to Ohio State and would allow victims of sexual assault between 1978 and 2000 to sue the land-grant university. Another one by Representative Kristen Boggs, a Democrat from Columbus, would eliminate the statute of limitations altogether. Representative Boggs, you're with us now. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about what your thinking is when it comes to eliminating the statute of limitations across the board for rape or sexual assault.
Certainly. I mean, I think, you know, what we now know as it relates to what we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt to these rape crimes, that if someone is a victim, if someone has evidence that they were raped beyond a reasonable doubt, and a prosecutor feels like they can bring this case forward and successfully convict the perpetrator who raped that individual, there is no reason why that person shouldn't have access to justice. You know, to arbitrarily say that because this incredibly traumatic criminal event happened more than 25 years ago, denies your ability to access justice for that crime simply is abhorrent to me.
You know, there's such a different school of thought between the different parties in the Ohio General Assembly on this score, Representative Boggs. How do you bridge that chasm?
You know, it is an issue that I do see becoming more bipartisan. You know, most of the attorney generals, regardless of their party affiliation in Ohio, have come out in support of ending the statute of limitations, including Governor DeWine, including Attorney General Yost, who's in the office now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, it still remains very, there are still some leaders in the Republican Party, one who was just on your show, Representative Bill Sipes,
mm-hmm,
who are very loud and vocal against eliminating the statute of limitations. But every day I see more and more realize that there's no legitimate reason to deny someone access to justice when they can prove that they have been a victim of such a horrific criminal situation.
You know, Marcy Hamilton just told us that Ohio is one of the most egregious states when it comes to these issues. Why Ohio? What do you know about, since you're, during your time in the Ohio General Assembly, what is it that's different about Ohio?
There have been a few really loud and vocal thought leaders on this issue that
Like Representative Sipes, or?
Like Representative Sipes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only with ending the statute of limitations on rape, but ending the marital exception to rape in Ohio. As the law stands now, under certain situations, it's still legal to rape your spouse in Ohio. And that archaic thought process is being driven by just a few members of the General Assembly.
Marcy Hamilton, when you've observed how other states have changed course over time, what were the triggers? Is something just not happened in Ohio that changed people's minds, or what?
Well, Ohio has had plenty of stories of sex abuse and sex assault, which normally helps. But it really is up to the lawmakers, and it's a matter of educating them with the facts. It's not enough to say, you know, listen to the stories of the victims, sadly. That often is not enough. What they need are the facts and the data about the trauma, about how much the state is paying right now. I mean, one of the things that most lawmakers don't understand is that if you were to do a window for adult victims and for child victims, and so they could retroactively sue for the harm done to them, just like New Jersey just did, the settlements have a lien on them from Medicaid. So the state right now is supporting all those victims who can't afford to support themselves because they're suffering so much through the Medicaid system. When these settlements come through, the groups that cause the abuse, the individuals that cause the abuse, end up paying for that, and the state coffers are paid back. The state of New York will make about $250 to $300 million in return funds because the state was having to support it. So the state's choosing to pay instead of making the institutions accountable.
We have an email from Shelley. She says, one is never unraped or unmolested. After more than 55 years, I can tell you it never leaves you. If one is never able to participate in a normal sexual relationship, I believe you could reasonably say that person has suffered a loss of bodily function. Representative, let's see. Well, we'll just leave it at that. But Kristen Boggs, Representative Boggs, any sense about how your bill will fare this time around?
You know, we keep pushing it, and I think the more we keep the conversation going, the more we do educate members about why it's time to eliminate the statute of limitations on rape and why it's so important to eliminate the cap on damages. You know, I think we are getting members to understand the importance of these issues. Whether or not they have the political courage to address them is yet to be seen.
Don in Canton, you're on the air. Hi, Don.
Hi.
Go ahead.
You know, this is a very, very hot topic this morning, and I got to tell you, I was flipping through the channels. I didn't catch the whole show, and I caught Bill Seitz, and, you know, he repeatedly, deep pockets, deep pockets, deep pockets. That's exactly what he's protecting. These politicians take money from the deep pockets to protect the deep pockets. Why should they not be held responsible when they turn a blind eye to a problem?
Yeah, you know, Marcy Hamilton, Don, thank you for that call. Marcy Hamilton and Representative Boggs chime in on this last kind of, that's all we have time for is maybe one more question. But Representative Seitz referred to the negligence by the institutions, be they OSU, athletic department, be they, you know, the Catholic Church or whoever, and maybe the church where a pastor rapes a child, as negligence is not like you participated in the rape. It's a legal term. Representative Boggs, is there a tweak to the language here that matters?
I mean, I think that we consider negligence as something that you didn't intend to happen. It was an accident, and you can't prevent an accident because you never intended it to happen.
But what about
when
turning that blind eye? Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly how we distinguish these situations. When you make a deliberate decision, and you're able to do that because you know your damages are going to be capped at, you know, such an amount, even if the crime does come to light, you're mm-hmm. making an economic choice in the best interest of your organization or institution, and that results in child or children being raped under your watch. That's horrific. And
And Marcy Hamilton, is it really just down to a few word changes and what the legal definition of those things are?
No, it really is a matter of political will. This is an issue that should be nonpartisan and bipartisan. This is about children, and it's about the public interest in knowing who the perpetrators are in the state of Ohio. And essentially what we're hearing from the opposition to the victims is they're preferring the predators and the institutions.
Marcy Hamilton, professor at the University of Pennsylvania and CEO of Child USA, a nonprofit think tank working to end child abuse and neglect. Thanks so much for your time today. Also, Representative Kristen Boggs of Columbus recently introduced legislation that would modernize Ohio's tort reform and rape code. Representative Boggs, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody else, for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.